From WJCT in Jacksonville, this is Redux. I'm your host, Vince Kong, bringing you our weekly news magazine, and this is episode 5. It's Friday, September 23rd, and Florida's population is booming, especially here in Northeast Florida, but do we have the infrastructure to keep up with the growth? And don't tell its legions of fans that it's just a gas station, even though it's just a gas station. Wawa is coming to the River City. And in honor of Craft Beer Week, we have the next best thing to a hoppy IPA with a hint of citrus. But first...
Oh my gosh! Did you hear what Nikolai told Scott about what Ashley said about Nikolai?
That was a radio drama about the Duval County School Board performed by our own Kat Davis, who's an actress and a poet. Anyway, to sum up the rough week for Duval County Superintendent Nikolai Vitti, we learned from an open letter to the media from school board member Scott Shine that Vitti could lose his job at a meeting which is scheduled for today. That's because Shine said in that letter, Vitti told him board chair Ashley Smith-Juarez wanted Vitti gone. Smith-Juarez did not confirm or deny the allegations earlier this past week, nor did she respond to calls from the media. Instead, she issued her own open letter, including statements that she had professionally and privately told him to take his talents elsewhere, which continued to fuel the fire of speculation. But it returned to business as usual after Wednesday's city council meeting with this.
We're just trying to figure out whether or not Friday you're looking for there to be a vote.
I think the letter was clear that that discussion was in the past tense, that I'm currently open to discussing what is the most effective and the best way for us to serve our students.
Since Ashley Wire-Smith was a bit ambiguous in her response as to her intent of firing Vitti, this podcast was delayed in its release just in case he was fired at today's meeting. He wasn't. For a full report, visit wjctnews.org. If you've been to a Northeast Florida gas station convenience store lately, most likely it was large and well-lit, with lots of food and drink choices. Gate, Racetrack, and Daly's are big players in the local market, and they're about to get some stiff competition as Northeast chain Wawa prepares to enter the Jacksonville area. WJCT business analyst John Burr and news director Jessica Palumbo have the story.
This company is a best-in-class convenience store. It's called Wawa.
Oh, yes. I remember Wawa. I lived in Pennsylvania for a while, and people love Wawa up there.
Yes. They're based in Philadelphia. They have a cult-like following, and they've come to Florida through Orlando starting in 2013, and now they've got 4 sites here in Northeast Florida, and they've got a couple more that they're working out.
And those are all in development, not opened yet.
That's correct. You know, this is part of a bigger trend in the convenience store industry. I'm sure you've noticed all throughout our area, there's lots of new convenience stores being built. You know, Gates got a lot of them, Racetrack, Daly's. These aren't the traditional Cokes and Smokes types of convenience stores that we all saw in the years past, but really big stores, 4,000, 6,000 square feet. You can get freshly made food there and do a quick shopping trip.
You said Wawa, though, is a best in class among all of these competitors. So what sets it apart?
Well, I spoke with the editorial director of Convenience Store News. That's a trade magazine. And he said that Wawa, what they really do well is their fresh sandwiches.
They're famous for their hoagies. Depending on what part of the country you're in, it's either a sub sandwich or a hero sandwich. But they're called hoagies in Philadelphia. And they're famous for that. They make them for you in the store right in front of you.
And another thing that sets Wawa apart is their innovative use of technology. They're about to launch an app where you can order food while you're driving in your car and have that hoagie and soda waiting for you when you show up to buy your gasoline. And did I mention they're also open 24 hours a day?
So if you have to have your hoagie at 3 a.m.
You can have your hoagie at 3 a.m.
With all of these convenience stores, why is the trend they're getting bigger?
Well, in order to prepare that hoagie at 3 a.m., you need a food service operation, and that takes a lot of extra space.
Companies like Wawa that do food service well, they hire the type of people who are good for hospitality purposes. They're not just people who stock shelves. These are people who understand how to take care of guests.
The fast food industry is starting to feel this. Grocery store chains are starting to feel the competition. it's hard to compete. People can get their gas, their dinner, some grocery staples, all in one stop, and they like that.
WJCT business analyst John Burr talked with Don Longo, editorial director of Convenience Store News, about Wawa coming to the Jacksonville area. I'm WJCT news director Jessica Palumbo.
Northeast Florida is projected to have the state's second largest population growth over the next 50 years. That's according to a new study. First Coast Development is also expected to be among the most sprawling. But the study's authors tell WJCT's Ryan Bank that those predictions don't have to come true.
The report from the State Agriculture Department, along with University of Florida and Conservation Group 1000 Friends of Florida, predicts a continued acceleration in land development. The Florida 2070 report says the state's population will grow by 15 million people in the next 54 years, a projection that's actually down by 3 million since the group's last report, Florida 2060. Still, if nothing changes, neighborhood development will more than double, severely restricting agriculture and conservation land. That problem will be especially pronounced along the First Coast, which is second only to Central Florida in projected population growth, says University of Florida planning professor Peggy Carr.
Even when we increase the development density by 20%, as we did in the alternative, we're still not seeing a real significant change in the gross development density. So what that means is more land is taken up to accommodate the projected population growth.
To conserve more land for farming, ecology, and historical preservation, Carr suggests increasing public transportation options, building new walkable areas, and revitalizing urban cores to lure more people into city centers. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Now, find out what happens when the infrastructure of a city is pushed to its limits. St. Petersburg is facing scrutiny over its recent decision to pump 20 million gallons of sewage from an overloaded treatment plant into Tampa Bay. WJCT's Ryan Bank continues his report as a national environmental organization is warning that similar overflows could become more common as the population grows and the climate changes.
The discharge happened after Hurricane Hermine dumped rain on St. Petersburg early this month, and the city's sewage system wasn't able to handle the extra water. Senior scientist Allison Kenward with D.C.-based think tank Climate Central says heavy rain is becoming more common as the earth warms, and many areas aren't equipped to deal with it.
In a lot of the country, we've got, you know, an antiquated sewage infrastructure system, a combined sewer system where sewage and stormwater kind of flow through the same pipes. And it's really not up to the task of the types of downpours that we're seeing now.
St. Petersburg's system separates stormwater from sewage, but it's strained after the city recently shut down a major treatment plant. At the time, officials were confident remaining plants could handle the extra load. Jacksonville's system separates waste from stormwater, too, and JEA has invested more than $2 billion to modernize infrastructure, including a new backup sewer line beneath the St. Johns River in case the main line fails. Utility spokeswoman Jerry Boyce says JEA is ready for projected population growth on the First Coast.
We have very systematic planning in place to handle the sewage as our community grows. In fact, we are currently in the middle of an upgrade out in St. Johns County.
But Kenward with Climate Action says her recent sewage study suggests even the most modern system is still vulnerable to extreme weather flows.
So during very heavy downpours or coastal flooding, cities like Jacksonville are still going to see some impacts from sewage overflows going forward.
But she says governments could help prevent human waste from polluting fresh water by doing more to prevent flooding. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Okay, here's an update. A month after Jacksonville voters passed a sales tax extension to cover pension costs, city employee unions are negotiating the terms of closing pension plans to new members. Mayor Lenny Curry says his administration is putting forward a solution he thinks will satisfy all parties.
It will recognize that we've got to create new plans that are sustainable. plans that the hardworking people of Jacksonville would feel good about, plans that will ensure that we don't have this pension crisis upon us again.
One employee union, the Jacksonville Supervisors Association, is asking for a 2% pay bump, which would apply retroactively to the 2015-16 fiscal year. But union president Jason Geiger says the city only wants to talk about the future.
We've made it very clear from the start, before we proceed into any negotiations into pension, we would like to settle the 2015-16 budget year. And we have failed to get anywhere with the city of Jacksonville on that particular year.
So now, in order for the pension tax to take effect, Jacksonville must close at least one of its three public pension plans through negotiations with nearly 10 different employee unions. Stay tuned. And now, for the final story of this podcast, in honor of Craft Beer Week, WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride brings you a story of gospel, a bar named The Silver Cow, and, of course, beer. Please enjoy, and cheers.
It's the first Thursday of the month. For Tim Kerr, that means he's setting up for Beer and
Hymns. Beer and Hymns is a kind of an Irish pub tradition. Where you get together and you do just what it says. You drink beer and you sing old gospel tunes.
And Kerr says everybody is welcome.
Yeah, we really don't want it to be a quote-unquote church night. A lot of the folks in this area have probably maybe been, I don't want to say harmed by the church, but don't feel necessarily welcomed by the church. So we'd like it to be a safe space.
Donnie Cusick is tuning up his bass guitar. He'll be accompanying tonight's vocals with a range of instruments.
I've got electric guitar, acoustic guitar, a banjo, a mandolin. My brother Larry's got a bass and got a couple more guitarists coming.
He says he plays in church every Sunday, but there's no reason worship music needs to stay there.
You know, there's something kind of nice about taking Jesus to places where you wouldn't necessarily expect to find him.
He classifies the style as
just old rip snorting, toe tapping stuff.
Beer and hymn nights are happening across the country, and it's all because of the Wild Goose Festival. Organizer Vanna Fox says the annual gathering in the North Carolina mountains combines spirituality, social justice, and music.
One of the things that just sort of happened was the beer tent was beside the main stage, and we were just doing some hymn singing, and it just became this huge, warm fuzzy for everyone to sit around and drink a beer and sing old hymns.
But she says beer and hymns isn't everybody's idea of worship.
You're going to get kicked back, particularly from the Southern Baptists and the more conservative within all the denominations, about the beer. So, pretty much we just smile and say, we would love to have you, but if you're not comfortable, I understand.
Tim Cassidy and his wife Patty are thumbing through hymn booklets at the Silver Cow. They're familiar with the place.
It used to be called the Grand Balloon, and Patty and I met here in 1976.
Patty says it's their second time at Beer and Hymns.
And we go to contemporary church now, so we don't really usually sing these songs. And so it's going back to a time and a moment in my life that is a good memory.
That's what a lot of people said. Hymns are nostalgic.
No, I'm not religious. Spiritual maybe, but I'm not a member of any church.
Frankie Lee is sipping a brown ale. It's sitting beside a skull with googly eyes in the cobweb Halloween decorated bar. She says there's no pressure here.
A very accepting, loving community, which I think if more churches were like that, I think they'd be a little bit more popular.
Beer and Hymns is every first Thursday of the month at the Silver Cow. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. As you may already know, last week was our pledge drive, and many of you took time to give. For that, we say thank you. Those donations help us produce the great local programming, like this podcast, that you need to be better informed citizens. But that's not all your support. You're also giving us the ability to bring you the best in entertainment with our After Hours music lineup. To give back to all of you out there, come out to Unity Plaza between 7 and 10 tonight. Electro Lounge host David Luckin and Indie Endeavor's Ryan Bank will MC as a group of five local acts perform for you and a live radio audience on 89.9 FM. One of the bands featured tonight is Jacksonville-based folk duo Billy and Bella. Here's an in-studio performance of Dreamwalker recorded for Indie Endeavor a few months back. And that concludes Redux from WJCT News. I'm Vince Kong. Thank you for listening.